I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1 The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, Jill Robbins has a story on a study about polyglots. Brian Lynn has the science reports on a recent test flight that marked progress toward a future moon landing. Later, Jill and Andrew Smith present the lesson of the day. But first, Gina Bennett reads one of the winning entries in our Teach Us About Ukraine writing contest. The essay is called How Ukrainian Schools Are Changing.
Ukrainian schools have been changing since 2017 with the adoption of new laws and standards. But other events also led to the changes in the Ukrainian education system. In September 2017, a new law on education, was passed to establish the main principles of the new education system. And the Cabinet of Ministers in February 2018 approved a new state standard of primary education. The new standard was first tested in 100 schools across Ukraine during the 2017-2018 school year. And all first graders around the country began to study under this new standard the following year. Instead of memorizing facts and concepts, students are to acquire competencies and lifelong learning in several areas. More attention is paid to the 21st century skills of cooperation, communication, creativity, and critical thinking. The reform, called New Ukrainian School, had been discussed for years. However, some factors and events greatly influenced and brought the changes. Another change to the Ukrainian education system came from the COVID-19 pandemic. Schools were closed during quarantine. Students did not go to school but started online learning. That, in turn, helped increase digital literacy. Teachers and students learned to use Zoom, Google Meet, Google Classroom, and other digital applications. Teachers also learned to create video materials and develop interesting schoolwork and exercises. The emotional part of learning also changed. The friendly, warm atmosphere and the feeling of home and unity appeared in the lessons. The following lesson is an example. Would you please read, Matthew? Asks the teacher. Can you show us your cat? Matthew replies. Well, we are going to do our tasks first, and we'll have 5 minutes at the end of the lesson to show our pets. At the beginning of online learning, many students kept their cameras off during the lesson. Some were shy. Others did not like how they looked and did not want to show their faces. As time went on, students began to feel more comfortable and turned their cameras on. Besides, how can you show your cat without the camera? The situation changed again in February 2022 with the Russian invasion. cities and villages were attacked. Some were occupied. Others lost electricity and internet. And there was no learning for months. In September, online learning restarted with a different mood. Students would ask each other, "Hello, Nick. How are you?" "Fine." "Is everything all right?" "Yes." But everyone understands that everything is not all right. They give short answers in a low voice. Students in the Russian-occupied territory are not permitted to study at Ukrainian schools. Their cameras are off. It is not because of shyness. It is because of fear. But the rest of the students turn off their cameras too. It is done in solidarity. Even as teenagers, they are old enough to understand what danger means. So, Ukrainian schools are now changing. The changes are not just in buildings, lessons, competencies, or methods. The changes are in people's lives. I'm Gina Bennett.
Most people around the world speak one or two languages, but some can speak three or more. These people are called polyglots, and they are helping researchers better understand how the human brain deals with language. In a new study, a team of scientists monitored the brain activity of 34 polyglots. The polyglots spoke between 5 and 54 languages. The scientists used a method called functional magnetic resonance imaging, or fMRI. In fMRI, the brain is studied through images that measure changes in blood flow in different areas of the brain. The researchers used fMRI to study the brain as the polyglots listened to different languages. The researchers found that when the polyglots heard a language they knew, activity increased in the area of the brain involved with language processing. That area is the cerebral cortex. When they listened to a language they did not know or knew less well, there was less activity in the cerebral cortex. Evelina Fedorenko is a brain scientist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and a member of MIT's McGovern Institute for Brain Research. She was also a senior writer of the study, which recently appeared in the publication Cerebral Cortex. She explained the findings. "We think this is because when you process a language that you know well, you can engage the full suite of linguistic operations, the operations that the language system in your brain supports," Fedorenko said. However, an exception caught the attention of the researchers. For many of the polyglot participants, listening to their native language produced less of a brain response compared to hearing other languages they knew. On average, the response was about 25% less. And in some of the polyglots, listening to their native language activated only one part of the brain's language network, not the whole thing. Olesya Jaroflov is a brain scientist at Carleton University in Canada. He also helped write the report. He said that the brain's neural processes were more efficient or effective when the polyglots heard their native language. Therefore, the language network in the brain does not activate as much as when they do native versus non-native language processing, Giroflof said. The brain's language network involves a few areas in its frontal and temporal lobes. Saima Malik Morileda is a doctoral student at the Harvard-MIT Program in Speech and Hearing Bioscience and Technology. She was one of the lead writers of the study. She said, "The findings suggest that the way the brain finds or extracts meaning in language governs the brain's response to language. The more meaning you can extract from the language input you are receiving, the greater the response in language regions, except for the native language," she said. Of the 34 polyglots who took part in the study, 20 were men and 14 were women. They were between 19 and 71 years old. 21 were native English speakers. The rest were native speakers of French, Russian, Spanish, Dutch, German, Hungarian, and Mandarin Chinese. Researchers monitored the polyglots' brain activity as they listened to recordings in 8 languages. 1 was their native language. 3 were languages they spoke well, somewhat well or somewhat. The other 4 were languages they did not know. Half heard recordings of Lewis Carroll's Alice in Wonderland. The other half heard recordings of stories from the Christian religious book, the Bible. I'm Jill Robbins.
The American Space Agency, NASA, says the recent test flight of SpaceX's Starship rocket demonstrated progress in several important areas, even though the rocket was lost. NASA is planning to use Starship to carry the first astronauts to the moon since the agency's Apollo 17 mission in 1972. But the spacecraft will have to pass additional testing before a moon mission. Such a mission would be part of NASA's Artemis program. The next planned trip in that program will be Artemis II, which is set for September 2025. NASA aims to send astronauts into orbit around the moon, but will not attempt a landing on the lunar surface. Artemis 3, planned for September 2026, will attempt to land astronauts on the surface of the moon. SpaceX's Starship rocket has been chosen for this mission. Both Artemis 2 and Artemis 3 have faced delays in planned launches. SpaceX's latest test flight of Starship took place on March 14th. Starship was able to travel farther than ever before during the flight, but the rocket broke apart when attempting to re-enter Earth's atmosphere. At the time it broke apart, Starship was nearing a planned splashdown in the Indian Ocean, about 1 hour after launching from southern Texas. During a live broadcast of the test flight, SpaceX confirmed that the rocket had been lost upon its re-entry attempt. Starship is designed to be reused. 2 Starship test flights last year both ended in explosions minutes after liftoff. By surviving for close to 50 minutes in its latest test, both SpaceX and NASA considered the effort a success. NASA Chief Bill Nelson praised Starship's test after the launch on X. "Congrats to SpaceX on a successful test flight. Starship has soared into the heavens. Together we are making great strides through Artemis to return humanity to the moon, then look onward to Mars. In a statement, NASA described the ways Starship's test brought the agency closer to being ready to fly astronauts to the moon. The space agency noted the rocket used its 6 Raptor engines to successfully separate from its first stage Super Heavy booster. The Super Heavy itself was powered by 33 Raptor engines. During a Starship launch test last April, several of the booster's 33 methane-fueled engines failed, and the booster did not separate from the spacecraft. This caused the whole vehicle to explode and crash into the sea 4 minutes after liftoff. SpaceX was able to double the length of the flight during another test in November. While all 33 engines fired and the booster fell away as planned, the flight ended in a pair of explosions, first the booster and then the spacecraft. The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, examined all the corrections made to Starship before approving the March 14th flight. The FAA said it was also investigating results of the latest flight. The tests are important for NASA and SpaceX. They permit engineers to test key systems and processes in flight scenarios in an attempt to gather data to support the continued development of Starship, said Lisa Watson Morgan. She is the program manager for the Starship program at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. SpaceX officials have said they plan to carry out at least 6 more test flights of Starship this year if the company receives all necessary government approvals. I'm Brian Lynn.
Brian Lynn is here now to talk more about his science report. Thanks for joining me, Brian.
Sure, Dan. Thanks for having me.
This week's report looked at the latest test flight of SpaceX's Starship rocket. We learned that NASA saw progress in the flight as it prepares for its future moon landing plans. When do you think we can expect to see another Starship test flight?
So, SpaceX officials have said they're planning to carry out at least 6 more test flights this year, which would clearly be a lot, but as noted in the report, NASA has set some new tight deadlines for its Artemis lunar program, too. Artemis 3 is the mission that would land astronauts on the moon's surface, and it will involve Starship. That one is planned for September 2026. So both NASA and SpaceX say in order to make this date happen, they will need to carry out a lot of regular tests, because if problems are discovered, they will take time to correct.
I know that Boeing's space vehicle called Starliner has also undergone testing for future missions for NASA as well. Are there new tests planned for this spacecraft?
Yes, the development of Starliner has faced repeated delays, but it is scheduled for a possible new test flight in mid-April. If all goes well with this test, NASA says it will attempt to approve Starliner to make regular trips to the ISS. Currently, SpaceX is carrying out these ISS transport missions, so getting Starliner ready to do this would permit SpaceX to focus on its moon missions and, after that, possibly trips to Mars.
All right. Thanks again, Brian.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dan.
My name is Anna Mateo.
And my name is Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
You're listening to the Learning English Podcast. Welcome to the part of the show where we help you do more with our series, Let's Learn English. The series shows Ana Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C.
The more you watch Let's Learn English, the more you will see that Ana is interested in many things. That's why Washington is a good place for her to live, because there are so many interesting things she can see and do.
That's true. There are a lot of interesting things in D.C. But Ana can still get bored from time to time, like in Lesson 13. Let's listen.
Hello! In Washington, D.C., there are many things to do on a Sunday afternoon. I like to exercise, I like to shop, I like to garden. But today, I feel bored. When I feel bored, I always look for something unusual to do.
Ana talks about feeling bored, but then she does find something interesting. She finds a birthday party for the famous English playwright, William Shakespeare.
There are many things to do in Washington, D.C. Some usual, some unusual. Today, I am not bored because it is William Shakespeare's birthday.
Sometimes it's the unusual things in Washington that help make it interesting.
That's right. Ana never stays bored for very long.
And, of course, if something is interesting, it's not going to be boring.
And what's boring to one person might be interesting to another person.
That's true. And I hope none of our listeners think our podcast is boring.
How could that even be possible? But let's do this to keep our listeners interested. Today, Andrew and I are going to say a few sentences that are grammatically correct in English, but native speakers almost never say them. However, we have heard people learning English make a mistake by trying to say them.
And we want you to try to answer this question. Why don't native speakers say these things, even though there's nothing technically wrong with the grammar? See if you can spot the problem. Here are our examples.
Example 1. I love watching Lionel Messi play soccer. When I watch his matches, I feel so exciting.
Example 2. I am really boring in the afternoon when I am waiting for the bus.
So what was the problem with those sentences? If you said the problem was the ing endings on exciting and boring, you are correct. Now let's hear the correct version of the sentences.
Example 1. I love watching Lionel Messi play soccer. When I watch his matches, I feel so excited.
Example 2. I am really bored in the afternoon when I am waiting for the bus.
Here's the key idea. The ing ending refers to the source, the thing that makes or produces the feeling in the person. And the ED describes how you feel as a result of the source. In the two examples, the soccer matches and waiting for the bus are the source of the feelings.
Right. So the match is exciting, but the person who watches is excited. And waiting for the bus is boring, but the person who waits feels bored.
So if someone says, I feel so exciting, that means the person thinks they are making other people feel excited. Someone would only say that in special situations.
So a performer, like a famous singer, could actually say, I try to be an exciting performer, because it's their job to make other people enjoy their music or their shows. But that's a special situation, because they are indeed the source of the excitement. The rest of the people watching the show, feel excited.
Now that you know that we use ing for what produces the feeling and ed for how people feel inside, we're going to use this in discussion. Jill, could you share an experience you've had that was very moving?
I watched a performance this weekend that was called 200 Years of Soul Music, with a storyteller and musicians and singers moving from African drumming through spirituals to hip-hop music. Through it all, the performers made a connection to African roots of the rhythms. I felt moved by the new understandings they opened up for the audience.
I think our listeners can understand that a moving experience is one that has a big effect on our emotions or feelings. So that's why you said, I felt moved.
Now here's a question for you, Andrew. What for you would be an intimidating situation? And have you ever been in one?
That's a good question. Well, here's one that comes to mind. I've always wanted to learn how to surf. It looks like so much fun to ride the waves on the surfboard in the ocean. So I've tried it a few times, but I have to say, when you're in the water and you see a wave rise up like a wall that's about to break onto your head, it's intimidating. The ocean is powerful.
So you felt intimidated?
I did, but not too much. I kept trying.
And did you ever stand up on the surfboard? You know, I went surfing once, and I thought just lying on the surfboard through a big wave was a big accomplishment.
I see what you mean. I did stand up, but only on smaller waves that were not so intimidating.
Intimidation is the noun form of this word. To intimidate means to produce fear or threaten.
You're listening to the Learning English Podcast. Jill, here's a question for you and our listeners about Anna. What word does she usually say when she is excited about something?
Oh, that's an easy one. She says, awesome, when she sees something interesting or exciting. Let's listen.
What is going on here?
It's a big birthday party for the writer William Shakespeare.
This is a party for William Shakespeare?
Yes!
Awesome!
Awesome!
It would be interesting to count the number of times she says that in the series.
Well, maybe I'll let you try that. But before we end today's podcast, let's read a little chant about the words bored and boring. Are you ready?
Ready.
Who's bored?
I'm bored.
You're bored.
He's bored.
She's bored.
They're bored.
In fact, we're all bored.
Guess who's boring?
I'm not boring.
You're not boring.
She's not boring.
They're not boring.
And we're not boring.
I guess that means that nobody's boring.
But I'm bored.
You're boring?
No, I said I'm bored.
Well, then let's learn with VOA. They're not boring.
All right.
Jill, that was a fun chant you made. I'll bet it kept our listeners interested.
I hope so. We don't want to be boring.
No, we don't. But you know what? A little boredom is okay. Sometimes we just need to rest and do nothing.
My cat is very good at that.
Yes, cats are the champions when it comes to relaxation. So, whether you found our podcast interesting, boring, relaxing, or even confusing, thanks for listening to the Learning English Podcast. I'm Andrew Smith.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.